I cannot go in there. If a woman enters the harem complex, she belongs to the Sultan. Mahmed peered out the window they had climbed through to make sure their path was clear. I would not hold you to that, Lada, and it would not matter. Everyone would know. I would be labeled your concubine and... Radu took her hand, which still hung in the air, pointing accusingly at Mahmed, and squeezed it in his own. And you would be unmarriageable? What a tragedy. I know how dearly you treasured the hope of marrying some minor Ottoman noble, dear sister. She finally met his eyes, hers still feverish and frenzied. But I would be his. I think our Mehmed is smart enough to know he could never claim you. Right? Radu's tone was light, and he turned to Mahmed with a playful smile. Perhaps it was the dimness of the room, or the stress of the night, but Mahmed's face was clouded with disappointment, hurt. Then a tight, false smile took its place, and he nodded. Radu's own chest felt equally tight with anxiety and fear, and a twisting, bitter sense of jealousy. He pushed it down. Assassins were after them. Lada had killed a man. They needed to move. He said a prayer in his heart, then went first, climbing slowly down the palace's carved stone exterior to the ground. Mahmed followed, and then Lada. Radu led the way, creeping through the gardens, keeping to the deepest shadows. How do you know the way to the harem so well? Mahmed said. I think you are more familiar with the path than I am. Radu flushed, feeling defensive, but there was no accusation in Mahmed's voice. I know the chief eunuch. He has an amazing collection of maps, and I visit him sometimes. Did you know he was born in Transylvania? Mahmed's tone was strained but amused. I did, in fact, know that about the third most powerful man in my government. Oh, right. Even when Radu had the best idea for keeping them safe, everyone always knew more than he did. He stopped outside the guard gate, a side entrance to the vast harem complex. A guard stood posted, his white turban a bright spot in the dark night. On his first trip, Radu had tried to see a difference in the eunuchs as opposed to uncastrated men. But other than their voices not being as deep as a man's, nor as high as a woman's, he was not able to tell who was a eunuch and who was not. The guard, whom Radu had met before, cocked his head curiously at Radu before noticing Mahmed behind him. He bowed low to the ground, then stood at attention. Mahmed did not acknowledge him as he walked straight past. Radu nodded, and the man's eyes followed them. Without knocking, Mahmed entered the outer apartments of the chief eunuch. Though it was late, they had not been in the room more than a minute before the chief eunuch joined them. He was an older man, nearly 40, skin wrinkled and features indistinct, as though his face had never decided quite who it wanted to be. He bowed to Mahmed, then straightened with a smile for Radu. He took in Lada's blood-stained appearance with a mere flick of his gaze. How can I serve you, my sultan? I need a conference with the Valid Sultan. Also lodging for the night. Of course. Whose company would you like? It took a moment for Radu to follow the easy way in which the chief eunuch asked the question, and then another moment to process what it meant. His face grew heated with embarrassment and also curiosity. Did Mahmed come here regularly? Was he already enjoying the benefits of being sultan? How many concubines could he have amassed after so short a time? Did he have a wife already? Islam had rules about how many wives a man could have, but exceptions were made for sultans. And what was it like being with him? Did they love him? Did they wait every day, hoping to see him? Radu glanced at Lada to see if she was wondering the same things. Her eyes were fixed determinedly on the far wall, a scowl set on her face. They had cleaned the blood from around her mouth and off her hands, but there were traces of it still. She looked wild and angry, nothing like a concubine. At least, not how Radu imagined them to look. Radu pictured concubines like his nurse, matronly and soft, and always sewing or fussing. He knew that was not their purpose, but whenever he tried to imagine that, everything got hazy and confused. Mahmed's voice was strained. None tonight. I am here on business. Prepare a room for my companions as well. Lada will need a bath. Shall I have the servants escort her to her new room? No! Mahmed's voice came out a shout, making the chief eunuch startle. No! She is here as a guest, not as a... resident. Houses in the guard wing. And no one can know that we are here, Radu said, unsure if he was allowed to speak, but worried that Mahmed was too distracted. Mahmed gave him a brief, grateful glance. Yes. My business is with the Walid Sultan alone. And no one, not even my guards should they inquire, is to know that we are here. The chief eunuch nodded, then bowed again and left the room to make preparations. As soon as he was gone, Mahmed's shoulders slumped. He put a hand over his eyes, head hanging low. Lada had found a bit of dried blood on her hand and was furiously rubbing it against her skirts, trying to get it clean. The fact that her skirts were stained with blood did not seem to occur to her. Radu stood between her and Mahmed, not knowing what either needed, suspecting they both needed the same thing. He went to Mahmed instead of his sister and put his arm around the Sultan's shoulders. Mahmed leaned gratefully against him. Radu looked up at Lada and held out his free arm. She considered it, eyes heavy with exhaustion, and something that looked suspiciously like sorrow. Before she could move, the chief eunuch returned. Mahmed straightened and stepped away from Radu, and Lada resumed staring at the wall. Follow me, the chief eunuch said, and Radu once again found himself in the back. The pool of light from the eunuch's lamp, not quite reaching him. 23. Mahmed's mother moved with a sensuous grace that terrified Lada. Lada could not seem to get comfortable, no matter where she sat in the opulently perfumed and padded room. The Walid Sultan occupied too much space here, with her silks and her veil and her dripping jewelry, with her careful face and her calculating smile, and the way she lay across several pillows with as much precision as any Yanacheri sword. If Halima and Mara were different seasons, Huma was nature itself. Sit down. Her voice was kind, but a narrowing of her eyes indicated that she would brook no argument. Mahmed ceased pacing and sat across from her. He seemed as out of sorts as Lada. He had never known his mother, not in any real sense, and now came to her from a place of weakness. It was not ideal. Lada remembered the sensation of the dagger meeting the resistance of flesh, the unyielding bone that made it turn coarse, always seeking more, deeper, deeper. Not ideal. None of this was ideal. She had bathed, her hair still wet, but her hands felt sticky, and her mouth would not surrender the memory of the bright, metallic taste of blood. Radu, however, seemed fascinated, even delighted by the Walid Sultan. He sat near her, a rapt, worshipful look on his face. As though sensing the weight of his admiration, the Walid Sultan turned to him. Her lips, so much like Mahmed's, parted in a way that was almost like their nurse's smile. A way her lips had not moved for Mahmed. You were very clever to bring him here. Radu, is it? She sat up, leaning forward and putting her finger under his chin to lift his face. Beautiful, she murmured. Her gaze flicked toward Lada, whose spine stiffened and jaw jutted out defiantly. She knew how she would compare. The Walid Sultan's smile shifted into something less maternal. But Lada did not know what it was. Walid Sultan, Lada said, scowling over the show they were being forced to endure. We need to... You may call me Huma. Both of you. She turned back to Mahmed, settling back down and resting her lovely cheek on her palm. and you may call me Mother. A small laugh, like coins being dropped into a well, escaped her lips. We do not have time. Huma held up a hand heavy with gold, cutting off Mahmed. We do not have time to panic or to display weakness. We have all the time in the world to allow you to engage in your much-deserved holiday as you take full advantage of the pleasures of your harem. Indeed, were the new sultan to spend an entire week of debauchery and riotous celebration with his women, no one could blame him, or interrupt him, or access him, and no one could discover how tenuous his power truly was and how close he came to being murdered before he could rule. But the assassin did not exist. It never happened. No one would ever attempt to take the life of the sultan, because to admit an attempt happened and nearly succeeded is to admit that it is possible to imagine an Ottoman Empire without you at its head. Her darkly lined eyes narrowed. Do you understand? You are not hiding here. You are reveling. You are enjoying your power. Mahmed nodded, one slight dip of his head. Huma's face returned to its cheerful, lovely mask. I have already sent the chief eunuch notice to inform the pashas and viziers of your activities. Word will spread. We have all the time we need. It was a good lie, and in order to be a good lie, it had to be believable. Lada did not want to think about why it would be so easily believed, how much time Mahmed had already spent here, whether there was precedence. She did not want to think about any of this. It made her weak, this avoidance of reality, and still she recoiled when her mind tried to settle on it. Huma stood, a rustling of silks and a cloud of sweetness trailing in her wake. But there was an undertone to it, a sharp scent that made Lada's eyes water and her head swim. Now go to your rooms. Servants will be by to see to you shortly. Mahmed opened his mouth as if to argue. Huma raised a single, perfect brow. Let your mother take care of this, my precious son. The soft and comforting words were spoken in a tone that pierced like a needle. Feigning a look of indifference, Mahmed walked past her, followed by Radu. Lada stood to leave as well, but Huma's arm shot out, blocking her way. Take a meal with me. I would rather return to my room. Huma traced a finger down the line of her own hip, stroking the material of her dress lazily. It was not a request. Lada took a step forward, but Huma seized her wrist. Huma laughed, and in her laugh Lada heard all the secrets she had never been privy to. Ladislav Dragula, daughter of Vlad, who sent forces, including his own son, to fight at Varna, thus invalidating his treaty with the Ottomans and leaving his children's lives utterly forfeit. Ladislav, whom no one in the world other than her beautiful brother and a powerless sultan care about. Little Lada, who is in my house, under my protection. Sit down. Lada remembered the feeling of skin and tendons clamped between her teeth, the resistance of flesh meeting the determination of her jaw. For one brief, dizzy moment, she considered attacking Huma, savaging her the same way she had Mahmed's attacker. Instead, she sat. Good girl. Huma clapped her hands, and a trio of delicate flowers in girl form came in, setting food and drink in front of them, then gliding silently away. Lada watched the girls, and as she watched them, she wondered, are they Mahmed's? Has he been here? Has he picked these flowers? Huma's pointy red tongue flicked out, running along her teeth as she considered the meal in front of them. Lada was reminded of a snake, which confused her. Women were the garden, and men were the snakes. Her nurse had explained how men and women came together in the marriage bed to her when she was very young. Around the same time, her religious tutors had taught her the story of Adam and Eve, The two had mixed together in her head, until it was men and their snakes that had persuaded Eve to lose her beautiful, perfect garden. No garden could survive the introduction of a snake. Everything would be lost, would then belong to the snake forever. Larda knew more now, of course, from the rude talk and graphic stories of the Yanacheris. They had only served to further her conviction that her interpretation had been correct all along. But here was Huma, and she was no garden. She was a serpent. Murad liked his girls very young. I spent several years eating almost nothing so that I could stay small and undeveloped. She picked up a leg of chicken, roasted and covered with cracked flakes of pepper. Her eyes rolled back as she bit into it, a soft, satisfied hum slipping through her lips. I thought I would die of want before I ever managed to conceive an heir. But then precious Mahmed took up in my womb, and I could eat again. Larda took some flatbread, tearing it into small pieces as she watched Huma luxuriate over her food. Several more times the little flowers brought food, refilled Huma's wine, even wiped her mouth clean. "You are fascinated with the girls," Huma said. Larda snapped her attention back to the older woman. She had assumed Huma was so absorbed in her consumption of food that Larda had let her mind and gaze wander. "Why do they veil their faces? Does your god hate even the sight of women?" Huma laughed. "You misunderstand. Women should veil their bodies, yes. But veiling the face is a symbol of status. Only women who are so well provided for they can afford not to do menial labor may wear a veil. These girls have earned their veils. It is a mark of privilege." "Privilege? They are slaves," Huma laughed. "So am I, dearest. I was sold as a very young girl, brought to the harem as a servant as well." Larda scowled. "You should have fought them. You should have escaped." "To where?" "I was angry for many years, and frightened. But there are many ways to be powerful. There is power in stillness. There is power in watching, waiting, saying the right thing at the right time to the right person. There is power in being a woman. Oh yes, power in these bodies you gaze upon with derision." Huma ran one hand down her ample breasts, over her stomach, and rested it on her hip. "When you have something someone else wants, there is always an element of power." "But it can be taken from you." Larda had seen enough of men and the world to know that a woman's body was not an object of power. "Or it can be given in exchange for more important things. These girls, my servants, understand that. The smart ones, anyhow. They will spend years climbing, trying to get in a position where they have some measure of control. The ones who are clever will do better than the ones who are merely beautiful." Her gaze was so pointed, Larda felt herself blush. She dropped the pieces of ripped flatbread onto the plate in front of her. She felt awkward, ungainly, and uglier than she had ever considered herself before. It had not bothered her most of her life, knowing that she was not beautiful, would never gain admiration for her looks alone. But Huma used her face as a weapon and a tool, in a way Larda never could. Larda had never realized that simply by being attractive, she might have gained more threads of power. Larda lifted her chin defiantly. "I can be strong without giving anything up. I saved Mahmed." Huma picked up a date and sucked on it. "Yes, you did. And that was well done. But you did not think you were the only woman who was ever killed to protect him. Did you?" Larda frowned in confusion, then immediately regretted it. Huma seemed to be pulling information from everything. She was dragging her long fingers through Larda's very soul, merely by watching her face. Huma lay back on her pillows, lifting a hand to her forehead, her sleeve falling down to reveal the long, pale curve of her arm. It was such a tragedy when Mehmed's eldest brother fell ill and died so suddenly. To be struck down in his prime, and then Mehmed's second brother and his two sons murdered by unknown assailants. Oh, what sadness! Only one son left, of an age to inherit should Murad fall in battle. Her expression of mock sorrow shifted to something darker, angrier. Or should he decide to retire and simply throw his one remaining heir to the wolves? Murad has jeopardized everything I worked for. Larda's mind spun.
But you cannot leave the harem. How could you have done all this?
Did you notice the men who work here?
Larda shook her head. Exactly as it is supposed to be. My precious eunuchs, they make everyone so deeply uncomfortable. Men cannot stand to look upon them, tormented with imagining what they must have endured to become what they are. The eunuchs are slaves, just as I am, but they, too, have sacrificed. They have had something precious and irreplaceable taken from them, and in doing so, have created a place of power for themselves. They are everywhere in this country, in every important household. They are clerks. They are guards. They are mine. Huma sat up, her movement so sudden and violent compared with her lazy, sensual motions, that Larda jerked back.
You see this?
Huma gestured to the room, the building, and finally to herself. As a prison.
But you are wrong. This is my court. This is my throne. This is my kingdom. The cost was my freedom and my body.
Her fine eyebrows raised, mouth playful, eyes hard. So the question becomes, daughter of the dragon, what will you sacrifice? What will you let be taken away so that you, too, can have power? This was so different from what Mara had presented to Larda. Not an offering of oneself for the benefit of a bigger cause, but the offering of a portion of oneself for the pursuit of personal gain.
Nothing,
she stammered.
Would you sacrifice my son?
What?
No, I protected him, I...
Would you sacrifice what you think your life should be for what it could be? Were you to rule at my son's side? Huma paused, then laughed at Larda's tortured expression.
So that is not your design.
Very well. You may go now.
But I want you to think on what must be sacrificed to secure a future where no one can touch you.
I want you to think of Mehmed and his future. She waved a hand dismissively, and Larda fled.
24. All the fear that had felt so overwhelming in the darkness seemed tempered the next day, as the brilliant sun illuminated a palace going about business as usual. Huma had instructed Radu and Larda to act as if nothing had changed, but to draw no attention to themselves. Radu took a deep, shaking breath, then slid along the wall toward Mehmed's rooms. Returning to the scene of the assassination attempt was probably a bad idea. If there were soldiers in the hall, he would turn and run, pretend to be lost, pray they were not the ones who let this happen, since Mehmed did not know who had been on duty, and they could not very well ask. But Radu wanted to be brave. Maybe Larda and Mehmed, in their terror, had missed something. If he went in, if he searched the... Even thinking the words, the body, made him recoil. But he would. Huma wanted to pretend it had never happened. Radu wanted to know why it had. If he found some vital clue, he might be the one to rescue Mehmed this time. Radu might have gotten Mehmed to safety, but Lara was the one who had actually saved him. That bothered him more than it should, and made him reckless. However, when he turned the corner, the cavernous hall outside Mahmed's rooms echoed with the absence of life. Was the body still inside? Had no one discovered it? Huma had notified everyone that Mahmed was reveling in the harem. Perhaps no one had been in Mahmed's room since. Sick with dread and a morbid curiosity, Radu slipped through the doors, past Mahmed's waiting chamber, toward his study. He held his breath, then stepped inside. No blood on the gleaming tile floor, no discarded dagger, no lifeless assassin. Someone had cleaned up after all. There was nothing to suggest the violence this room had held. But no, that was wrong. A rug, one of Radu's favorites, cheerfully blue and yellow, was gone. The only evidence was the absence of things that should have been there. The body, the blood, the rug, and Mahmed. Radu walked to the desk, reverently placing his hands on various objects. An inkwell, a map of Constantinople, with notes scrawled across it in Mahmed's compact, aggressive script. Several booklets of religious thought that Radu had been hoping to borrow. A heavy, leather-bound tome detailing the life of Alexander the Great. The whisper of an outer door sent Radu into a panic. He threw himself behind a pillar, just as the door to the study opened. The intruder's steps were quiet but assured. Radu heard items being shuffled, then the crackle of a stiff sheet of parchment resisting being rolled. The intruder left as quickly as he had entered. After a few seconds, to calm his racing heart, Radu left his hiding place and returned to the desk. Everything was there, except the map of Constantinople with Mahmed's careful notes. Without giving himself time to think better of it, Radu raced out of the rooms. He saw a hint of movement around a far corner and ran after it. He turned the same corner and saw the figure. A boy, perhaps 16, wearing the plain clothes of a servant, walking with submissive but purposeful posture. It was exactly how Radu would move if he needed to get somewhere without being noticed. And so he copied the boy's posture, always keeping him in his line of sight, but staying far enough back not to be noticed. He followed the thief out of the palace grounds, to the nearest street, where opulent, majestic homes bullied the cobblestones for space. The thief joined several people filing in and out of the gates of the first estate. Radu grabbed a basket lying on the stones near the entrance and tucked it under his arm, grateful that he was wearing simple clothes today instead of one of the nicer outfits Mahmed had gifted him with. The thief entered the home through a side door. He knew where he was going. Radu followed, winding his way through a busy kitchen, nearly losing sight of his prey. They went through a back hallway and then up a narrow flight of hidden stairs for the servants' use. The walls were close, the steps uneven, the air damp with confinement. In the gloom, Radu only just saw a door swing shut. As he was about to climb another flight of stairs, he pushed through the door into another world. Light spilled with reckless abandon through a wide, high-ceilinged hallway. Thick woven rugs lined the floor, with tile gleaming in the gaps. Statuary and pottery kept the turquoise-hued walls company, reassuring each other of their glorious beauty. Highly polished metal mirrors hung at regular intervals, giving the impression of hallways beyond this one. All the doors were shut, and there was no sign of the thief. Radu nearly backed into the stairwell when he noticed that one of the heavy wooden doors was slightly ajar. He crept toward it. If anyone caught him, he would have no excuse for his presence. "Cleaned up, as you predicted," said a voice Radu did not recognize, but suspected was the servant's.
"The little swine,"
a deeper, older voice growled. There was a rough sound of parchment being flattened, then a few seconds of heavy silence. Radu glanced nervously down the hallway, but he was still in the clear.
"Arrogant devil,"
the older man said, followed by some choice curses.
"He He thinks he can defeat the walls of the city. That is in his divine calling. May God save us from servants such as these.
There was a swish of parchment, the scratching of a quill. Sweat trickled down Radu's back. Taking a deep breath, he put his eye to the cracked door. The room was revealed in a single line, and Radu shifted to expand his view. There, the back of the servant. And at a desk, pouring wax onto a folded letter to seal it, the man. Halil Pasha. Halil Pasha pressed a ring into the wax, then handed the letter to the servant.
See that this is delivered.
Radu darted from his perch near the door, back to the stairwell. His breath came in shallow, desperate gasps. He crept into the shadows, clinging to the bottom of the next flight of stairs, waiting. The door opened, and with a terrified rush, Radu launched himself forward against the servant. The boy grabbed at Radu's shirt, but his fingers found no claim as he fell backward down the narrow stairs, head slamming into the wall as his feet went over and his body thudded before coming to a stop, jammed at an awkward angle. Radu waited one breath, two breaths, three interminable breaths that filled his lungs with fear instead of air, and then, when the servant did not move or cry out for help, he rushed to his side. The letter was not in his hands. It was all for nothing. Radu had murdered him. And now, the boy's chest moved and a low groan escaped his lips. Radu prayed his relief to the heavens, then felt in the servant's clothes for, yes, the letter. He tucked it into his own shirt, then hurried down the stairs, nearly falling over his own feet. Taking a few precious seconds at the bottom, he slowed and entered the kitchen calmly. Every limb screamed at him to run, but he walked at a measured pace, a pleasantly blank look on his face, before he finally emerged into the sunlight of the yard and then escaped through the gate. Only when he had turned back to the palace grounds did he allow himself to run. A flash of dark hair and a familiar, aggressive walk caught his eye. Gasping with relief, he changed direction, ploughing into Lada and nearly knocking her over.
"What is wrong with you?" she said, grabbing his shoulders to steady them both.
"I have just come from... Someone was in Mehmed's rooms, and they stole... There is a letter here!"
He waved it in front of Lada's face. Scowling in exasperation, she snatched it from him and stalked away. He followed her, checking over his shoulder.
"Stop it!" she snapped. "You might as well be waving a flag that says, I am guilty!"
He tried to copy her walk, force himself to stare straight ahead. When they arrived at the harem, a eunuch let them in, and they returned to Lada's room. It was sparsely furnished with a plain bed and a simple chair, the chamber pot tucked into the corner and a small wash basin on a low table.
"My room is nicer," Radu said, nerves bubbling over.
"Of course it is."
Lada sat on the bed and dropped the letter beside her.
"Huma loves you.
Everyone loves you."
Radu itched to find out what was in the letter, to tell Lada how well he had done. It would be important. It had to be. But what if it was nothing? What if he had attacked a servant over a letter to a distant relative? Halil Pasha had said nothing of the assassination attempt. The servant could have been picking something up Halil Pasha was meant to have. Terrified to be wrong. Terrified to be right. Radu delayed.
"What were you doing out?"
"I visited Nikolai. He has heard nothing of an attempt on Mehmed's life. Elias continues to lead his men as though everything is normal. But we were supposed to keep it..."
Lada lifted a hand to silence him.
"Nikolai will not spread the news. We can trust him. Though he was surprised at the attempt, he seemed less surprised at my theory it was Yenacheri. Dissatisfaction spreads through the men like a disease. Nikolai even heard talk of hating Mehmed for several Chobachi." She huffed in exasperation at Radu's confused look.
"Chobachi are the Yanacheri's commanders.
I have heard talk among ranking Yanacheris. But for Chobachi to be speaking up, things must be serious. But Nikolai does not know who is responsible."
Radu held up the letter, his hand trembling.
"Maybe this has answers,"
Lada cracked the seal and opened the letter. The ink was so fresh Radu could smell it. His eyes went immediately to the signature.
Halil Pasha.
Lada spat his name like a curse. She did not even elbow Radu away as he leaned against her to scan the letter.
He is writing to Constantinople, reassuring them that Mehmed will never lead the Ottoman troops against them.
But he cannot promise that. Mehmed is determined to...
Radu stopped. Lada met his eyes, her own heavy with knowledge.
He can promise that. Mehmed cannot lead Ottoman troops against them if he is dead.
Radu stood up.
We have to tell someone. Halil Pasha will be arrested and...
And who will arrest him?
The Sultan's Yanacheris? They hate Mehmed.
We do not know which of them or how many or how high up knew of the attempt.
And who would believe us?
This says nothing of killing Mehmed or having already tried to. It is flimsy evidence against a powerful man.
We have to do something,
Lada scowled.
If only Murad had come back like he was supposed to, none of this would be happening. Mehmed will not give up the throne. He wants it now. There has to be another way to help him.
Lada folded the letter, tapping it absently against her leg. What would you sacrifice for power?
What?
She looked up at him, brows furrowed, an expression of intense thought on her face.
For power, Halil Pasha would kill Mehmed. For power, the Yanacheris would abandon their duty to the throne. Everyone is willing to sacrifice Mehmed. We must figure out how to do it first.
Radu backed up, aghast.
We have to protect him. I will not let you sacrifice him.
He turned to leave. Lada grabbed his arm, but he shook her off, turning the door handle. Lada knocked him to the ground, her knee digging into his back.
Shut up and listen to me. Something must be sacrificed. That something is Mehmed. We sacrifice Mehmed's throne now so that he lives to take it later. If he stays, he will die. We keep him safe until he is older, smarter, stronger, when he will come to the throne not as a powerless child, but as his precious hand of God on earth.
Do not mock him.
We will lose everything, Radu.
Lada's voice was ragged, and Radu felt a sudden fear that if he could see her face, she would be crying. That terrified him more than anything, the idea of Lada breaking down. The man she had killed, the attack, they were foreign to him. He had not seen them or felt them in any real way. But Lada crying meant the end of his world. If Lada could not be strong, how could he ever hope to be? She continued.
Mehmed is our only protection. Do you think I want to see him powerless? Without Mehmed in charge, we face execution for our father's crimes. So we help him. We figure out how to beat Halil Pasha.
We would be gambling with Mehmed's life. The next assassination attempt will not fail. She leaned heavily on top of him, easing her knee off his back.
Our lives were forfeit the moment father brought us here. I cannot...
She paused and her voice got softer. She tangled her fingers in one of his curls, tugging like she used to when they were small, but with no force.
I will not risk Mehmed's life on the chance that it will work out in our favor.
It does not matter. Mehmed will never give up the throne.
If Lada had seen him that day in the baths, seen his joy and his determination, she would understand. Mehmed was the Sultan now, with as much passion as he had for everything he set his sights on. Lada moved, her back against the door. Radu joined her shoulder to shoulder.
If we ask him to abdicate, if we tell him he cannot stay Sultan, he will never forgive us. We will lose his friendship and his trust. Then we arrange for the throne to be taken from him. It is that, or his death. The throne and his pride, or his life, Radu.
Radu thought of his friend,
thought of the fire in his heart that was burning ever brighter as he worked to claim his destiny. He thought of it all being taken away in the most humiliating way possible. He thought of Mahmed's spark being taken from the world forever. He leaned his head against the heavy wood of the door. It would break Mahmed, but it would save him.
How do we do it?
Lara rested her hand where a sword would be sheathed if she were practicing with the Yanacheris. I think I have an idea.
You want me to what? Huma asked.
Laughter teased her voice, but there was violence behind her eyes.
Get the Yanacheris to revolt.
Why would I do that? It would destabilize the whole city.
Exactly.
Lara sat perfectly still and spoke calmly. Radu knew it was taking great effort. He could tell by the way one of Lara's feet, not quite hidden beneath her skirts, bounced up and down.
They are already primed for revolt. If you can bribe someone high enough up to ignite it, the soldiers will follow. When Mahmed comes to you for advice on how to handle it, tell him to raise their pay.
Huma frowned. I know the Yanacheri commander. Kazancha Dogon. He would do it, but it is a dangerous precedent. That money comes out of taxes we take from very wealthy, important people. They will not be happy about Mahmed caving to the demands of the Yanacheris rather than ruling them. If enough unhappy viziers, pashas, beys, and valise demand Murad come back to the throne, even he will have to listen.
Huma's elegant hand cupped through the air between them.
No. I will figure out another way. I do not want Murad back. There is only unrest because the Yanacheris have another option. If Murad were dead, they would have to accept Mahmed.
She stood, pacing.
With Murad dead, I could be declared regent until Mahmed is older. I would have to get support. I think I could get Kazancha Dogon behind me. But Halil Pasha... She sat down heavily, all grace gone out of her movements.
No, he would never support me.
If anything happened to Murad, Halil Pasha would arrange to be declared regent. And once he has the throne, we will all be dead.
Lara pointed emphatically.
We need Murad. If he does not come back, Mahmed will die.
No. With time, everyone will see that he will make a good sultan.
Radu handed her the letter, which felt far heavier than the parchment could account for.
We do not have time.
As Huma scanned it, her mouth drew down at both corners.
Lines appeared between her eyes.
Constantinople.
That damnable city.
It is the heart of everything, Lara said. The Yanacheris do not want to fight there, and they fear Mahmed will lead them against its walls. Halil Pasha is obviously in contact with Constantinople, and the city itself is seeking Mahmed's death. And Mahmed will make no secret of his goals. So it is impossible to persuade his enemies that his life should be spared.
Huma's voice came out in a whisper.
There must be another way. I have worked so long and so hard to get here.
This is not about you, Lara snapped.
Huma's face hardened. Radu leaned forward, desperate. He had to persuade her.
A disowned son is of more value to you than a dead one. We keep him safe now so that when he comes back to the throne, he can truly rule. With you as the most powerful Valide Sultan the Empire has ever seen.
For a few eternal moments, Huma stayed exactly as she was. And then the stone left her face. Her eyelids were heavy with resignation.
Very well. I will set this in motion.
Get out. Relief engulfed Radu. He and Lara stood to leave. Huma's tone resumed its normal lingering, teasing state.
You two are very good friends to my son.
Radu beamed. They had made the right choice. But then, Huma continued,
and very, very bad ones. Pray he never finds out what you have done today. 2 weeks later, Lada and Radu rode beside Mahmed in the carriage past the smoldering remains of buildings burned in the revolt, out of Adirna, toward Amasya. As one, they stared at the passing countryside, carried away from all of Mahmed's dreams. Murad was back on the throne. Radu and Lada had not seen him or even mentioned his name, each too terrified to even whisper about what he might do if he remembered what he owed their father. All they had to do now was disappear into anonymity and hope no one realized that they should be dead. And so Radu and Lada sat next to their one friend. Radu was relieved to be free of pressure. At least they were returning to Amasya. They had been happy there. Maybe they could be again. But they were both silent in the shared secret of their escape. The truth that Mahmed could never know. Their secret was deeper and darker than the pool in the woods. Lada took her brother's hand and squeezed it. A grip as painful as their new bond. They had betrayed Mahmed.
25. 1451. Amasya. Ottoman Empire. Lada screamed, her voice ripped away by the wind to trail behind her. She pushed her horse harder. Her quarry was close, nearly within reach, but they were fast approaching the trees and she would lose him once they got there. That could not happen. One last burst of speed, and she drew to within a hand's length of the other horse. She threw her leg over the saddle, balancing on the side. With a battle cry, she launched herself from her horse and slammed into Radu. He shouted in surprise, and she scrambled for a handhold. With her hand wrapped in his cloak for leverage, she threw her upper body over the saddle and grabbed the reins. Thrown off balance, the horse veered wildly to the side, skidding to a stop so sudden both Lada and Radu tumbled to the ground.
"What is wrong with you?"
Radu shouted, shoving her away. She rolled onto her back, the brilliant blue sky spinning above her. She laughed.
"Have you lost what little wits you had to begin with? You could have killed us both!"
Still gasping with laughter, Lada patted Radu on the cheek, the force of it making a light slapping sound.
"But I won. You,"
he jabbed a bruising finger against her arm.
"You."
Finally getting his breathing under control, Radu shook his head and smiled.
"You cheated." "There is no such thing as cheating. There is only winning or losing. I won. And if we had both died? As long as you died first, I still would have counted it as winning."
With an exhalation that might have been a laugh, Radu hurried to his horse, who stood nearby, eyes still wide with fright. He talked to it in low, soothing tones, stroking its long velvet nose. Lada looked around for her own steed. It was also nearby, under cover of the trees, peering out at them. Probably hiding from her. Smart beast. Radu calmed and gathered both horses, and then held out a hand to Lada. She experienced her usual jolt of surprise and jealousy at finding his hand was larger than hers. She came to his chin, if she stood on the balls of her feet. Somewhere in the last 2 years, her baby brother had become a man. He had grown fast and straight and strong, the cherubic roundness of his cheeks slowly fading to reveal cheekbones and a jaw of stone. With no baby features to balance his large eyes, they were striking. A dark sweep of lashes framing them beneath thick brows. He wore his long, lazy curls tied at the base of his neck.
"Oh," she muttered, tucking his hair, "you are so pretty, like a delicate butterfly beneath my boot."
"Oh," he replied, pulling one of her own curls, which were thick and coarse.
"You are so mad, like a rabid hound that needs to be put down."
Their ride back to the keep was leisurely, meandering along the banks of the river. As they passed through the city, Various storekeepers and merchants waved happily to Radu, who paused to inquire about sick children, hoped for crops, and various other mundanities that made the space behind Larda's eyes go soft and blank with boredom. No one said hello to or even acknowledged Larda. Without Radu, she would have gone mad living here. In the 2 years since they left Adirna, some of the distance between them had closed. They shared blood and secrets enough to know that without each other, they had no one. It was something. Mahmed was a third part of their bond. He considered them his truest friends and only allies. The guilt of knowing better made Larda softer, broke down the anger she had kept up for so long. They were safe here. That was also something. The last 6 months, though, had been the dullest she had ever known. With another war against Hunyadi, everyone who mattered was gone. Even Mahmed had been called up. Someone shouted her name, making her startle and pull her horse to a quick stop. She turned to find Nikolai riding toward her, his familiar grin quick and easy, despite the large gash that ran from the center of his forehead to the bridge of his nose and onto his left cheek.
Larda, did you miss me?
She frowned, tapping her chin.
Have you been gone?
I had not noticed.
You cried yourself to sleep every day.
I luxuriated in the blessed quiet that you left in your wake. He clapped a hand on her shoulder, still beaming, and she finally allowed herself a smile in return. In truth, she was overjoyed.
Tell me everything, including how that happened, she nodded toward his scar.
This?
Alas, my beautiful face.
Is it not tragic?
You should be grateful. For the first time in your life, you have two eyebrows instead of one.
Nikolai threw his head back, laughter roaring through the square.
My little dragon, always finding the bright side of life. Come, we drink.
Radu caught up to them, pulling his horse alongside Nikolai's. His eyes scanned the street, body tense as he stood with his feet in the stirrups, as though by standing tall, he could make what he wished for materialize.
Is everyone returning?
Larda and Nikolai met one another's eyes with a knowing look. She feigned annoyance, but in truth she desperately wanted to ride through town to catch the very first glimpse of Mahmed. Where was he? Was he safe? Had he been wounded like Nikolai? Nikolai tried to pat Radu on the head, but he could no longer reach high enough.
Mahmed stopped in Adirna. I do not know when your master will return, young pup. Tell me, Larda. Have you been able to house train him while Mahmed was away?
Alas, all attempts have failed. He wets his mat nightly with both piss and tears.
Always so nice to have you safely returned, Nikolai,
Radu said, his tone as dry as the crops beneath the unseasonably warm autumn sun. He waved and rode away, leaving Larda and Nikolai to their own devices. He would not admit it, but he left to avoid what they were going to do next. And so he could hide the fact that he was preparing to observe Ramadan, as though Larda did not know. Larda and Nikolai settled in the back of a small shop the Yanacheris frequented, because, with a little extra coin, the owner conveniently forgot the prohibition against alcohol. Larda waited through several stories, including the disgraceful flight of Hunyadi, before finally broaching the only subject she wanted to hear about.
How did Mahmed do?
She feigned innocent curiosity. They had spent so much of their time the last 2 years studying tactics, examining old battles, gathering what information they could of the various threats to the Ottoman Empire. After his humiliating ejection from the throne, Mahmed had been determined to never fall short again. And after her betrayal of Mahmed and her own father's betrayal of her, Larda had done everything she could to help him.
The little zealot surprised us all.
Nikolai raised his drink, his cheek distorted by the livid scar when he smiled.
Those of us in the right flank under his command suffered the fewest casualties. He knew his part, and he played it well. Better even than our father the Sultan.
Larda hid her traitorous smile behind her heavy mug.
Careful, Nikolai. That sounded almost like praise.
I will be damned if I ever call him father. but your Mahmed may yet make a decent sultan, until he bleeds us all out against the walls of Constantinople.
Relieved and buoyed by news of Mahmed's triumph, Lada relaxed into her seat, enjoying Nikolai's tales of the campaign and exaggerated stories of mayhem, gore, and personal heroics. They were joined by several other Yanicheris, who were not devout and loved to imbibe, each settling into the dim space. Soon the room was packed, shoulder to shoulder, everyone silly with drink and post-travel lethargy.
"But you still have not told me how you finally got two eyebrows," she said, after a comic reenactment of Nikolai's struggles to pull his sword out of a Hungarian soldier's stubborn ribs before a screaming Transylvanian reached him.
"Oh, that. I run afoul of the camp seamstress," Nikolai gestured to his groin. "She always has to adjust the standard uniform to account for my massive manhood, and she finally tired of all the extra material required. Her shears are very sharp." The room roared with laughter. Lada rolled her eyes, glad it was dim enough to hide her blush of discomfort, though she usually avoided this talk with the men, worrying what it might encourage. She had missed them too much to let them exclude her from their bawdy jokes. She sniffed derisively.
"More likely she mistook your manhood for one of her delicate needles."
She got a louder laugh than Nikolai had, along with several slaps on her shoulders. She leaned back, stretching out and taking up space the way the men around her did, and grinned at her friend.
"I could show it to you if you like." Nikolai held his arms out wide. "Are you prone to fainting?"
"My eyesight is quite poor. We would need some sort of lens for me to be able to see something so small."
Several soldiers banged on the table, and one fell off his chair, either from drunkenness or laughing so hard. Ivan, who had disliked Lada since the day she bested him when she first met Nikolai, leaned forward.
"But some things are not so small in here."
He reached out and grabbed Lada's left breast, squeezing painfully. Before she could react, Nikolai spun Ivan away, slammed his head against the table, and threw him to the ground. Grinding Ivan's face into the hard, packed dirt floor, Nikolai growled,
"Lada is one of us, and we do not treat our own that way. Understand?"
Ivan groaned his assent. Nikolai sat down again, easy smile back in place, but a weighted silence had poisoned the atmosphere. This had never happened to Lada before, but she suspected she had Nikolai to thank for that. How long had he been deflecting things like this? How much had been said when she could not hear it? Nikolai's defense had proved the exact opposite of his claim that she was one of them. She felt it, like a curdled meal threatening to come back up out of her stomach. The knowledge that she could never be their equal. She would always be separate. Ivan's glare as he pushed himself off the floor promised a future of violence. She met his stare with an unflinching one of her own. 26. Radu waited, breathless with excitement as he watched the caravan approach the keep. There was a fine carriage in the center, with 20 Yanicheris and a couple of mounted eunuchs, which Radu thought odd. However, the presence of the eunuchs was explained when the carriage opened to reveal a different member of the Sultan's family than the one Radu was desperate to be reunited with. Huma stepped out, distaste written across her features, as she took in Amasya, clinging to the river beneath them. The sight of her after 2 years, knowing what their last meeting had been about, filled Radu with fear.
"Radu, look how you have grown."
She held out her arms, and Radu took her hands in his, unsure of how to greet her.
"You look well,"
she laughed, the sound low and itching, like a breath full of smoke. "Appearances are deceiving." "He is not with me, so you can stop watching over my shoulder." Radu gave a false smile.
"What brings you to Amasya, if not returning with Mahmed?"
He wanted nothing more than to ask her when Mahmed would be returning, what the delay was, but he felt it important to appear calm. I am here on family matters. But